befriending our gifts. If you think about those words, they're positive words, gifts and friends, with that gentle ownership of ours, our gifts. And befriending our gifts took me to friends. Befriending. What does it mean? We think we know, but what does it mean being friends? We are social tribal creatures. Look around the room. In case you were wondering, you're not alone. We understand and experience ourselves in relationship, in relationships. That loving kindness meditation that we do off and on and we did this morning explores that web of relationships. It starts with me, moves to family, where to friends, to teachers, to enemies, and then that great line, indifferent persons, and then to all beings, as we talked about earlier today. Friend is a word of connection, a positive word. Webster's definition says, friend is one attached to another by affection or esteem. And then it follows that with acquaintance. I think friend is more than an acquaintance, but we use it in that way. And the number two definition, friend is one that is not hostile. Not one who is not hostile, one that is not hostile. A friend is not an enemy and is one we like to be with. A broad range, but a range that is important to be in, to befriend. Somebody reminded me this morning of the problems that Facebook raises when you start talking about being a friend or befriending. And they said, I tried to befriend you, but you wouldn't let me. And I had nothing to do with it. It's just a computer going on there. But they pointed out that Facebook makes this whole notion and is changing our understanding of the language and makes this simple thing feel difficult because of that. A broad range, but a range that is important to be in. Befriend. A friend. A good friend. My best friend. I still, one of my dogs that's been in my life, you know, has died, been dead a long time, and I still, just in thinking that, he was my best friend, makes me emotional. There's a New Yorker cartoon this week, shows part of the range. It shows two little girls with their cafeteria trays standing next to the table, so they've obviously gotten their food and they're about to go to the table in that ritual of let's go sit together, maybe. And one girl says to the other, let's be friends. And then in 20 years, we can say we've been friends for that long. Ron Parton, I asked Ron over here if he had something about friends, and he shared something with me I'd like him to share with you if you're willing to do it here, Ron.
Well, Jen and I have been active UUs for 44 years now, and during that stretch, about, and this is no exaggeration, I'm sure, three-fourths of my friends that I've made, what I would really call my best, closest friends, have come for one of those three congregations. And I was mentioning to Jim that as I'm getting ready on many, many Sundays, and it goes through my brain, maybe my next best friend is going to show up today. So I'm always excited when I see these people getting up and saying, we just moved here. And it's like, oh, cool, let's meet. This may be it. See me downstairs.
And sort of version for all you introverts is, look out, here comes Ron. He said he's an introvert. Yeah, that's great. It's just a wonderful vision and a way to come. Thank you, Ron. He also said he's a member of Friendship Force, and Friendship Force has this understanding, creating world peace one friend at a time, because they go and stay in people's houses and get to know people as people. Friend is a relationship of choice. C.S. Lewis said it has a side-by-side quality. One way to choose to be friends is that we like to do the same things and we end up doing the things we like together. It's sort of an affiliation word. Another version of that is that we just like to be together. So that is, we like to be with each other. So we figure out things to do together, in part to be together, or so that we can come together and be friends in that space. Befriending is voluntary. It's not usually covenantal. That is, it doesn't have a spoken agreement. It is unspoken, but it's a very real bond. Befriending involves expectations, but we don't really expect a friend to be everything or to be perfect. We give our friends generous readings. That's a great phrase. We give our friends generous readings. You say, yeah, I know them, and he or she is, they're just like that. That's just Jim being Jim. So let's befriend ourselves. We befriend ourselves through friendship, through friendships. We come to love ourselves better through friendships, and one of those friendships could be with ourselves. How about that? Two brief stories, and Pastor Roy. One is one I've told before, but it's the one moment in counseling that stands out beyond all others. I was getting counseling after a big loss, and the counselor said, "You can't change your loss. You can't bring that person back in your life. But you have friends. You have friends." And she said, those friends are always there and can be a piece of that loss. It's not quite the right words, but you get it. So I called. I had permission to call my friends. And I called up and said, "Mike, Nancy, I'm feeling lonely tonight. Can I come over?" What a wild idea. And I did it. And then I didn't talk about all that was going on, but we just were there together in friendship. And the other thing I did, I didn't discount that time for what it was not, or what it didn't do, or what it couldn't be. I appreciated it for what it was for and to me. And then the other story is a story of Ken Morrison. He's the father of my best friend. And he died 3 years ago at the age of 93. His wife, Helen, is still alive and very vital at 95. And I go and see them when I'm home. I go and visited them. And I saw Ken occasionally over the years. But he greeted me by saying, "Good to see you, friend." And when I left, he would say, "Come again soon." Here's the piece. It was only as I was preparing my notes to say something at his memorial service that I recognized the power of what was happening in those little exchanges. And by using the word friend, I had been befriended. Ken Morrison befriended me. Befriending our gifts.
It's quite easy to stand up here and talk of befriending. I'm co-leading this worship service with one of my dearest friends. I don't mind saying that Jim and I are a good example of friendship. Now, to show you how precious his friendship has been for me, let me take us back to February of 2012. It was just 2.5 months after my grandson died in a car crash in Oklahoma. And I was serving a congregation as an interim minister in South Central Pennsylvania, away from my wife and any kind of family support. My contract with the congregation was for a 2-year ministry, but I was feeling stressed. I was away from Gene, and grief had me distracted from serving the congregation as I needed and wanted to serve them. And so, graciously, the board gave me a leave, and I took a leave and went back to Atlanta, my home, to reflect on whether to stay there for a second year with them. And contacted Jim, and Jim came to Atlanta and stayed with me to help me discern my decision about whether I should stay longer with the UUs of Cumberland Valley. And Jim asked the very kinds of questions that surface from his caring heart and his intuitive, empathic presence. And I needed that. And I will just, I'll be forever grateful to Jim for that gift of friendship. Now, Jim and I have known each other, as he said, for about 16 years, and our friendship emerged just as C.S. Lewis spoke of how friendship might very well develop. We met at SUMA, which is the minister's retreat, UU minister's retreat, twice a year, held up at the Mountain, which is a camp and conference center near Highlands. At first, this is my first experience with Jim, yeah. At first, I was just a little bit afraid of him. Because of his Harvard smarts, how they came across, because he asked some pretty challenging questions to presenters, and also in business meetings, and I was the president. But then over time, you know, my reaction of trepidation turned quickly to respect as I noticed that he was coming from depth with those questions. And I was drawn to this fellow. And you have no doubt witnessed many times the depth of wisdom to which I refer. I won't offer examples. I wrote these words before Jim had any idea that I was going to say this. Is he turning red? He sure is, isn't he? Now, what Jim wants me to address, and he didn't want me to necessarily say that, wants me to address is how I see love in its various forms coming to play in the context of gifts. This is also why we put this up here with tasks, relations, and the deep within in our congregation's lives. We want to bring this out within the theme of befriending, because that has a direct correlation with acknowledging the congregation's many varied gifts. Again, I will draw from myself as an example, but you will see right away that what I say about myself is intended to start you thinking about yourself in terms of this community of faith. Your gifts, your interests, and even your deepest longings are evoked in certain ways by being part of this congregation. My longings, my desires, my gifts include the love of music. Music sings in my heart. It resonates in my soul. A substantial part of who I am gets stirred up and gets sparked into life by music. It matters not whether it's bluegrass or classic rock or Beethoven's Emperor Concerto. And if there's rhythms to the piece, my body will just naturally go on and mimic that pulse. I may even start dancing or maybe even ham-boning. I just come alive in the presence of music, you know? I learned it from my dad. One of his better qualities. The sense of aliveness when I'm singing or dancing or playing an instrument satisfies my soul. It stimulates something in me that wants to come out and find expression. And that musical aliveness is one manifestation of eros, the form of love that is born in desire and wants to come out through some form, singing, dancing, through into the soul's yearnings, you know, into expression. That kind of musical eros comes out best in spaces that welcome it to come out and even invite the music to come into the space. That open invitation, the spaces spaces created like this space right here, to feel free to actually get musical. You can't come out and get musical if somebody's not giving you that space. You have given this community a wonderful space in which to come out and be who you are as a people through your various kinds of gifts. That sense, by the way, this room itself, I know you know it, it is sort of like curved around, wrapped around, just like the arms of love embracing you. That was not a mistake. Jim and I had been in conversation back when you all were first considering this redevelopment, and he started tossing out some ideas. I want them to be welcomed. I want them to feel the sense of welcome. And it wasn't just the architect that came up with this. And this whole notion of coming in that foyer pointed toward the chalice was no mistake. This wraparound feeling was literally the arms of agape love, unconditional. You are welcome here as you are and who you are. When I find others who share the same kind of love of music as I feel, we end up becoming friends. Together as a group, we help create fellowship and a sense of community. Just the music, just from that music that we share, that camaraderie, that fellowship, that is another form of love, and it's called philia. Philia, fellowship, friendship, camaraderie, community. Those are the three Greek forms of love. Agape, which welcomes eros, your yearnings, your desires to unfold, to come out in the freedom, the non-judgmental freedom, the presence of that agape love. Then your gifts can come forth. And when they're shared with others, that's philia. My point here is that eros comes alive in the group. Philia naturally develops. Friendship and camaraderie form around shared persons, passions. And when in this congregation you feel a passion that you really want to share with someone else, like say, for example, the marriage amendment, which I know was major. Not only did you get to share that, but I'll just bet you also formed friendships out of that. Greater sense of connectedness between some of you because you had that shared love. That's an example right there of philia. And we could, of course, name other things like religious education, your passion for the children in this child-friendly congregation. We could say it about many of your shared interests and concerns and loves. Your Wendell Berry riff now.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Something I was going to say. Oh, to be really clear, it was opposition to the marriage amendment. We got it. And yeah, and we came together around our opposition. That was good. I wrote down that, my Wendell Berry riff, I wrote down that we are busy people. Duh. We stay busy. I'm focused on that we're right at 11:30 right now. As we get busy, we focus on the task at hand. It's very easy to get so focused on accomplishing the task, getting it done, that we forget what Wendell Berry says about good work. What does he say is its health? What is it that makes what we are trying to get done good? The love and the work of friends and lovers, those who love, are what make it good. The love and the work of friends and those who love not only make the work we do good, they belong to the task and are what makes it healthy, are its health. Volunteers, listen up, if there are any volunteers in the room. To find the good and connection and belonging and good sense of contribution that you are looking for, this is how you take care of what you care about. Turn to number 562 in your hymnal. Mother Teresa, you can read through that. She approaches this same idea, I realized, from the topic of love. But she says, it is not how much we do, but how much love we put into the doing. What we are doing is not just business or busyness. It's not just business. Nothing can be just business here, ever. I now hear the last line of Wendell Berry, that quote, differently than I ever have before. What number is that? Well, you've got your hymnal up there, 697 or something like that. Flip to it. Not by your will is the house carried through the night. Not by your will is the house carried through the night. I just kind of read over it for years as a general sense of doing your best and then letting go for God, letting go to God. But now, as of yesterday, I hear it with a more specific insight for a community that once the tasks are done and all is quiet for the night, that is when we rest. It is not my will. That is what I have made happen that carries the house through the night. But the way that we have worked together, that's what continues the work. The way we have worked together, the love and the work of friends that we have shared and experienced. And that itself, Roy added as I shared that with him, is the incarnation, the embodiment of the holy, how we work together. What are the gifts? What are the tasks that we love, that we care about, and that we befriend into being?